different. I don't know if I should call it Money Matters or not, since we're not going to talk about money today. We're going to talk about men's health. Now, this kind of came about, and I'm going to introduce our guest here in just a second, but I really wanted to give you a little background of why in the world would I be tuning in a Saturday morning program and talking about urology for men. And the answer is, we talked about this from a standpoint a month or so ago with Dr. Stritsky, and I'll introduce him more here in a moment. But we talked about it from what the changes are in healthcare, which makes more sense for this type of program. But we got a phone call about, hey, I can't urinate as much and things like that. But also, I found I have a group of guys that I meet with and have for over 15 years every Monday, and we've come to recognize how unique and different that is, because after you share a few joys, tears, and horrors of life with people for 15 years, it's a different relationship. But guys, we don't talk about this stuff. We don't talk about what's going on. Women have done this since they were teenagers and talk. Men don't. So they walk around out there with a lot of stuff, learning about sex from some guy that probably has never done it before, maybe an older brother or brother of a brother's friend or whatever. Anyway, these types of things we don't talk about. So we're going to talk about it today, and that's what we're going to do with Dr. Stritsky, who is a board-certified urologist out in Caldwell, and a great friend of mine for years and years. We've talked about this stuff, and because we've been friends for so long, people ask me these things as if I was some kind of urologist. But thanks for coming in today, Don.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, let's start with let's start off easy here for people, and we'll get right into all the stuff like low T and all that stuff, erectile dysfunction. We're going to talk about all that stuff, guys. And ladies, you're going to want to know, too, because this is a lot about what your guys are going through. But let's talk about when you go in and see a doctor. What do you want to see when people come in? I mean, you know, do they come in and they say, I'll take one of these green pills and a red pill, and you're going to know all that stuff?
It's very helpful when patients come in if they have some of their thoughts organized and they're prepared. So that would include having a written down list of medications and the strength of the pill that you're taking and how often you're taking it. So it's not at all unusual. It's almost a daily occurrence that somebody will come in and they'll say, Doc, you know, I'm also taking that little blue pill, and I take it sometimes every day and sometimes once a week, and I have no idea which little blue pill it is or what the manufacturer is. So having a current list of medications is especially helpful for physicians. Along with that, a written down list of allergies if you have more than one, and what the reaction would be. So did something upset your stomach? Maybe that's really not an allergy. Maybe that's just a bad reaction. But if you broke out in a rash, if you were itching, if you had troubles breathing, things like that, it's very important to know, and that's a little bit different than having an upset stomach. So in addition to a written list of medications, allergies are helpful to be written down as well.
Okay. Yeah, and I assume anything like, you know, any of your major problems. But the nurses would catch that up front, would they not, as a patient comes in?
They screen for that, but often things fall through the cracks. Mm. So having a written list of your health problems can also be very useful. So if you have high blood pressure, if you have heart disease, things like that, a list of your surgeries, and maybe it doesn't come to mind, but maybe you had knee surgery 10 or 15 years ago, and your knee's not bothering you now, so you don't think about it. But those things are important. So if somebody's had, for example, a total knee done, and you have a prosthetic joint in place, that's helpful information, because if I'm going to do surgery on them, maybe I'm going to adjust the antibiotics because of that joint that they have. So a list of surgeries, even if it was 10 or 15 or 20 years ago or longer, is also helpful.
Good. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of something like that. You wouldn't even think about having a knee surgery, which, by the way, that's the reason, one of the reasons we're doing this. I'm going to go do that here. All right, so let's get into some of the things that people talk about. And one of the things that we talked about when we were talking about the healthcare changes and things like that here a couple months ago, somebody call in about, you know, urination problems, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just start with the easy ones like that. Is that how normal is it? How many times am I going to get up in the night? Is it a symptom of problems? Tell us about that.
The function of urination and the bladder function will change with age no matter what. So as men and women, for example, get into their 50s, the average number of times to get up at night to go to the bathroom is once a night. 60s is twice. 70s is three times. 80s is three or four. So I will often have somebody in their 70s come in and say, "Doc, I'm getting up once or twice a night." I say, "Gee, that's pretty good. That's like a 50-year-old." and they're startled to hear that.
Yeah.
But those are changes that happen, and there are lots of different reasons, changes with hormone balances in your body, changes with the elasticity of the bladder. There are lots of things that will cause that, but it is normal to start getting up more often at night to go to the bathroom. On the other hand, if you're going five or six times a night, you're not going to get any sleep at night, that you'll be tired the next day, but that can indicate a problem that needs to be addressed. Along with that, it is also normal for men that the urine stream will start to diminish. And one of the main reasons for that, but not the only reason, is that as men get into their 40s and 50s and 60s, the prostate gland is growing. The urine channel that drains the bladder is called the urethra.
Mm-hmm.
It goes right through the middle of the prostate. As the prostate starts to grow, it starts to pinch that urethra channel close. It kind of strangles that channel. So it's harder for the bladder to empty. So men may find that the stream is slowing down. It may dribble when they finish urinating. They may go and stop and go some more. If that's becoming a problem, there are medications, and even in severe cases, there are surgeries that we do for that.
Now, but a little bit of that is normal, is what you're saying.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Because I guess some of the things that have been talked about with this group of guys I have, and the reason it comes up is kind of like, I can't turn on the TV, I can't turn on the radio, and they're not talking about erectile dysfunction, they're not talking about testosterone, or how many times I've got to take a pee. In other words, this feeling of getting older is not normal anymore. Or like, can we turn the clock back? I want to be 25 again. And my guess is we really can't do that with all the herbs and drugs out there.
It's really kind of unfortunate because with media available today, men are really bombarded with all of this that feel like you did when you were 20 and all of those things. And that's not reality. It's kind of like needing reading glasses. Things change and you need glasses. And you can take herbs and vitamins or various things. Most of the studies show that that doesn't make any difference in regards to the prostate or bladder function. There may be a couple of minor exceptions, but they're very minor. So some of those things are going to happen no matter what.
Well, let's go ahead and dive into some of those now, because I can't think of a day that I've managed to go through. Let's see, if I didn't have the internet on, I wouldn't see an ad pop up next to me with an attractive woman telling me some kind of a secret about testosterone. Certainly there's going to be, if I'm watching the Golf Channel, I'm going to see at least 16 commercials per hour about erectile dysfunction. So I can't get away from it. So what do, let's talk about it. Let's talk about those things out there. Can people, testosterone, let's start there. Can people do anything about it? Can we feel younger again? Should we be taking a supplement? I guess you can put it on your armpits. You can do all kinds of things now.
Mm-hmm. Men will often come in because they've seen an advertisement or their wife has seen an advertisement and they're convinced that they have low testosterone or they're very worried that they do. As men get into their 50s and 60s and 70s, the testosterone level can diminish to some degree, and that's a normal change. But for the majority of men, their numbers are still in the normal range. They're still okay, but maybe it's not as high as when they were 20 years old, but that's still normal. So, however, those same men that come in and they feel tired and washed out and run down and their sex drive is not as good as it was when they were 20 years old, are also 50 pounds heavier than they were when they were 20 years old, and they haven't had any significant exercise in a month or two, and they may be smoking, and they certainly enjoy having a couple of beers every evening, and all those things are going to affect your ambition, your strength, your stamina, your sense of well-being. So it's not as simple as saying, gee, I'm just going to take one pill, or I'm going to put on some lotion, or I'm going to get one shot. I'm going to feel like I did when I was 20 years old. People have to recognize that it's the whole big picture. And yes, sometimes a low testosterone can be a factor in that, but that's actually the minority of men.
Can we be, then let's take a step further. Is it dangerous? I mean, is it something I could, you know, I want to feel younger. So should I start taking something? I mean, I think I'm in pretty good health. I feel very, I feel normally functioning for a 52-year-old guy. But, hey, I want to be 35 again. Why don't I just take a little testosterone and, you know, feel great?
That's a great question, and I hear that question every week. Even though my testosterone is normal, gee, I'd like to feel better. And the truth is, yes, there are significant risks if you take testosterone. If your testosterone levels are too high, that can damage the liver. It can cause the blood to be more thick, which can increase your risk for heart attacks and strokes. So there are some very serious risks of boosting your level up higher when it's already normal. In fact, some of you may have read in the paper recently, there have been some articles that have been reported just in the newspaper about men on testosterone being at higher risk for heart attacks and strokes. We've known that for a long time. There's been more data recently to confirm that. But many men think, gee, I'll just take this one shot and I'm going to feel like I did when I was 30, and why isn't a little bit more better?
Right.
So, in fact, it's dangerous.
It's dangerous. Okay, so
you can feel better, but then you have a heart attack, and then you don't feel so good.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, let's get real about this a little bit, though. Okay, this is the same problem if we wanted to try to equate it to steroids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, if I'm going to have a problem 25 years from now, I can live with that. Mm-hmm. Right. I want to feel great today. If I'm not, I want to take an injection, a pill, or whatever it is. Throw a little herb under my armpits or whatever they're trying to advertise, and maybe I have some liver damage, maybe I have a heart problem when I'm 80. I may not live to be that long, and I want to have a, you know what I'm saying? So do you hear that, and what is your answer to that? Is it highly dangerous is what I'm trying to get at?
It's moderately dangerous.
Okay.
And things like heart attacks or strokes are permanent. And so, yeah, you may say that today, yeah, I want to feel better and I'll worry about that when I'm 80, but maybe you're 55 and then you have a heart attack or a stroke when you're 58 or 60, and no, the risks are too high. And for me to order that or prescribe that is malpractice.
Right.
So it's bad for everybody. So there are potential legal ramifications from that as well. So we simply can't do that.
Well, that's an interesting point, which also brings up the herb, the non-regulated entire industry, doesn't it?
It does. And there are a lot of things that can boost male hormones, and the male hormones are called androgens. There are a lot of things that are available that can boost that to some extent. The regulation is very poor. To what degree those can affect your androgens are unclear, so those can be dangerous, and people can feel better. That's true with some of them, but they don't. We don't really have a handle on what the level of the risk is, so you don't want to take that lightly.
Okay, all right. So, and that's now. Is there anything that people can do, or are we talking back to this general health in order to feel more youthful? Exercise, proper diet, don't drink too much.
Get your normal sleep. But along with that, yes, there are other things other than a low testosterone that can cause a problem. Like if your thyroid level is low, if you're starting to have issues with diabetes, there are many other things that can be affecting your sense of well-being. So testosterone can be one, but if you go in and you really do feel crummy,
yeah,
and you feel washed out, and we check your testosterone, and sure enough, it's okay. Well, that doesn't mean you stop looking. If somebody does really feel poorly, then we may refer them back to their primary care physician to look into other possibilities.
Okay. Let's come back and talk a little bit more about that. We got to take a quick break, but I want to talk about what we should be thinking about. In other words, if I really am washed out, where do you go? Do you just start taking different things who do you go see? All right, we're going to be right back. This special edition of Money Matters, Medical Matters, Men's Health Matters. I don't know. I got to say, if you're just tuning in, real quickly, this is something that guys need to know. We all need to know. And it's come to light. I've got a special group of guys I've met with for over 15 years. And through all that, you get to know each other pretty well. And as a guy that knows this doctor here pretty well, I'm privileged to have known him for over 20 years, board-certified urologist in Caldwell. In fact, one of the top doctors undoubtedly in the Pacific Northwest, if not the whole country. So we're privileged to know that. But because I know him, they think I know stuff. And so this has led to a lot of discussions, which I go get information from Dr. Stritsky and bring it back. But that's dangerous. So we want to go right to the horse's mouth. Guys don't talk about this, do we? We just don't.
No, not at all. And that's from youth. You're kind of taught as a child growing up that if you're male, you need to be tough. You need to suck it up. You don't want to talk about problems you have. You're not supposed to. You're supposed to overcome that.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the culture that we are raised in, and many of us continue that into adulthood. And so we don't talk about things, not very openly anyway.
Right, right. I'm sure you get to hear it, obviously. That's the, you know, you hear the problems. But let's go back to the thing that's all over the media right now. And why can't I just take some testosterone? And it's a fountain of youth. It's a chance to get young again and vibrant. Now, we talked about some of the side effects and whether they're serious or not. But I wonder if you might just add to that just a little bit.
Along with that, if a man goes on testosterone, and it can be administered in several ways. It can be a shot that's given intramuscularly once every 2 to 3 weeks. It can be a lotion that's applied like a hand lotion. It can be a liquid that's actually placed under the armpits and is absorbed through the skin. So there are multiple ways that that testosterone can be given. But as you're doing that and your body recognizes it's getting testosterone from the outside, the body's mechanism of making testosterone shuts down, and the testicles will shut down. That's the testicles make testosterone. So if the testicles stop making testosterone, and then you take your shots for 3 or 4 months, and you go, well, I don't really think this is helping me, and you want to stop, then you have a problem because the testicles aren't making testosterone anymore either, and all of a sudden, that's when your level really will be low, and it will take weeks to months for the testicles to rev up and start working again. So you will go through a period then where you may struggle. So, and if you start on it and you want to continue, then it's kind of a lifetime thing.
Wow, this isn't it's not a short-term thing if you have those kind of issues.
Yes.
So the effect to your body is it stops what you're artificially putting in.
Correct.
All right, so now I'm supposed to diet correctly, exercise, I'm not allowed to drink too much, all that stuff, get proper amounts of sleep. I got that. Okay, we all know that. Is there anything else that you can do to naturally boost your testosterone?
Exercise is the one thing. Exercise in moderation will help boost your testosterone. That's true. To kind of shift just a little bit, though, there are some serious problems if your testosterone is low, if it is truly low. So the values vary from lab to lab, but for the sake of this conversation and many of the labs, the value should be above 250, like from 250 to 700, for example. Most men will be right around 300. Okay. And that's okay. That's in the normal range, and that's okay. We generally don't see men with the testosterone of 500 or 600. Occasionally we do, but a typical is more like 300. If it is like 50, and it's supposed to be above 250, well, if it's 50, then that really is low, and that is a problem. And if we give those men testosterone shots, they feel much better.
Mm.
But if the testosterone is that low, there are other risks that go with that. You do lose muscle mass. Your bones can become thin and brittle with osteopenia, just as women experience after they go through menopause. There can be some changes with mental function and cognition. And by that I mean it's not like you suddenly get Alzheimer's disease or something like that. It's more like if you're really good at doing crossword puzzles and then suddenly your testosterone is quite low, it may take you longer to complete a crossword puzzle than it did before. So it's not like you suddenly develop dementia, but your mental processes will be a little bit delayed if your testosterone is quite low. So for somebody who really truly does have a low testosterone, there's real value in treating them. The problem is all of the men who are in the 280 to 300 range but want to feel like they were 20 years old again and are certain that the testosterone is going to be the answer, and it really won't be.
Gotcha, gotcha. And in fact, it sounds like it's really quite dangerous.
It is, that's right.
It's really not something to mess with. All right, so let's stay on this just for a little bit longer, okay?
Okay.
Because I think that people are still searching for, you know, wondering, okay? They might be out there and wondering, you know what, I don't think as well as I used to. I forget stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm only 50. Me, I'll say I'm 52, okay? I'm not exactly, you know, ready for a nursing home. I don't think as well. I can't remember as much, right? I can't remember the details. Mm-hmm. And so we all want to go and make sure we're doing the right things preventatively. Okay, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about what we should be doing. Do we go see a urologist, even if I don't think I have a problem? Or is this a primary caregiver?
That would be a primary care provider, and that's important to do. Men should be going in, even starting at a young age, because there are several things they need to keep track of, not just their testosterone and their urinary habits, but they need to know about their blood pressure and their cholesterol, and they need to know about the risk of colon cancer. And those are the things, for years we really focused on trying to educate men that they needed to get their prostates checked, they needed to get their PSAs checked, and we have really pushed that.
Mm-hmm.
There's some controversy and confusion about that at this point, and if you'd like at some point, we can talk about that as well.
Yeah.
But the point for this discussion is there are several things that men need to be aware of, and there are several things that need to be checked. And so they should go into a primary care physician. As men are in their mid-20s, it's a good idea to have a baseline where your cholesterol is, especially if there's a family history of high cholesterol levels. Similarly, as men get into their 40s and certainly their 50s, they need to know about their blood pressure. They need to know where their blood glucose levels are, checking for diabetes, those types of things. And those are silent killers. You think you're fine. You may have had the problem for 15 years, and then suddenly you have a stroke and you didn't realize there was a problem.
Right.
So those are things you need to start checking in your 40s and 50s to keep you healthy in your 60s and 70s.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, so you're starting off on that, and it really becomes critical, what, at 40 years old, 50?
It's a good idea to be getting your blood pressure checked every year or two in your 40s, and then in your 50s you really should be once a year. Similar with cholesterol levels.
Can you do that at the grocery store? You know what I mean? Where they got the little machine?
Yeah.
Is that accurate enough?
That's a good start. That's
okay.
A good baseline. It's not as good as going in and having a thorough physical exam, certainly, but it's helpful to do, yes, because then if it's quite high, you'll recognize that. And truthfully, and I don't want to give people excuses not to go to the doctors, but it is common that when people go to the doctor's office, they're under some stress, they're a little bit anxious, and their blood pressure can be a little bit higher.
Right.
And if it's a casual day and they're not stressed and then they're in the grocery store and they get their blood pressure checked, that actually may be more accurate than what you would get in the doctor's office.
Interesting. All right. We'll come back. Well, I want to talk some more about, you know, preventative. And, of course, we got to talk about erectile dysfunction. Come on.
Sure.
That's the
okay.
big thing, right?
Okay.
You can't watch golf without wondering about that.
Which pill?
Yeah. Which pill? What do they do? How magical are they? Hello, and welcome back to Money Matters / Men's Health. I'm here with Dr. Don Stritzky. He is a board-certified urologist, and you're working, of course, with St. Al's now.
St. Luke's.
Okay, that's right.
One of them.
I did know that. But a 50-50 shot, and I shot wrong. I actually did know that. All right, well, anyway, so I know you have been practicing here in the Valley for, what, close to 30 years?
A little over 23.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. I forget. You guys go to the 25th grade before you ever get out
right.
of school and get started. All right. So we've been talking about men's health and what to do. We've talked about some of the preventative things. Let's talk about the natural reality as we get older, not just about testosterone, but the big one, because you can't turn on the TV. You certainly can't watch golf. You can't watch Fox News without it. And that's erectile dysfunction. That's got to be a pretty big reason people are coming in to see you to get their fountain of youth back and feel like men again.
Yes, that's a daily request in the office, and you're absolutely right. There's a lot of confusion and misunderstanding about erectile dysfunction, who would get it and why, and why we aren't all like we were when we were 20 years old. And the reality is, as men get into their 50s, about 50% of men are having problems with their erections sometimes. As men get into their 60s, at 60%. As men get into their 70s, most men are having problems with their erections. And that's because we're not 20 years old anymore. It's like developing gray hair and needing to wear glasses and things like that. Our bodies are aging. Along with that, the nerves going to the penis are very small and delicate, and they may not function as well because of wear and tear over the years. The blood flow to the penis is through very small, delicate blood vessels. If there's some hardening of the arteries, the blood flow to the penis is not as good. So things start to change over the years, and that doesn't mean anything is wrong or bad. It just may mean that we're not 20 years old anymore. So there are the medications that are available to help with that. And right now there's Levitra, Viagra, and Cialis. And the way they work is when a man is stimulated and aroused, there's a chemical that's released into the penis called nitric oxide that causes the blood vessels to open and it causes the erection to form. All three of those medicines help that chemical work better and last longer. So it helps your own body work more efficiently. The medications will typically help about two-thirds of men who take it. So it can be helpful, but it's not a magic bullet. It's not a fountain of youth. It's not going to be like when you're 20 years old. But it can help. For men in their 50s who are starting to have problems, and they're kind of hit and miss. Their erections may be pretty good sometimes. Another time they're not so good. Men are starting to lose confidence. They're becoming concerned. They may take a Viagra pill and use it two or three times and have great success and kind of rebuild their confidence, and they do better, and then they may not need it again for 4 to 6 months. So there are occasions. It doesn't mean if you take it, you're going to be dependent on it for the next 20 or 30 or 40 years. You may take it a few times and then get along great for a while, and then a few months later you take it again, and as the years go by, you may find that you need it more often.
Interesting. Okay. So that's an interesting point, the confidence point as well, right? It doesn't matter what we do in life. Of course, this is delicate, and we're not supposed to talk about sex and things like that. But this is a pretty important thing for couples and everything, right? You and I have talked about this before, that couples that stay sexually active for most all of their life are closer, healthier. It helps in many ways, does it not? Just in the general relationship.
For some couples and relationships, it is really an important part of that. And it's kind of like the icing on the cake. Now, that's not true for all couples, and some couples are very content when they get at a point in their relationship where sexual intimacy is not that important to them. But for others, it remains very important throughout their lifetime. And for many couples, as men get into their 50s or 60s, and they start to have problems with their erections and erectile function, they begin to wonder, why is this happening to me? What's going wrong? What problems do I have? On the other hand, their partner may be thinking, why is he not attracted to me anymore? Why isn't he interested? Why can't he have erections like he used to? So there become conflicts in the relationship, and it's a hardship for both partners.
Right, right. So it is something to be worked through couple by couple. Not just, they need to talk about this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And with the medication, and I try to explain this to patients when I see them in the office, there are a few things about it. So the Viagra, for example, all of the medicines you have to take on an empty stomach, if you take it with food, it won't be absorbed very well. It typically takes about an hour to be absorbed. And then the medicine like Viagra stays in your system for 4 to 5 hours. Sometime during that period of time, you have to be well rested, you have to be in the mood, you need to be stimulated and aroused to get the erection started, and then Viagra can help it be better. If a man takes Viagra and he sits back in his easy chair and he waits for something to happen, it's not going to happen. If he is dead tired, if he's under a lot of stress, it may not work. Alcohol can compromise how well Viagra works.
Let's make that point clear, though.
Yes.
What you're saying, then, is it's not an arousal drug. It doesn't make you desire sex. It helps if you desire sex. Is that?
That's absolutely right.
Okay.
It does not help the arousal. And so if your desire, if your libido is poor, Viagra may not help you at all.
Okay.
So the circumstances, again, have to be right. You have to be well rested. You have to be in the mood. You need to be stimulated and aroused. Then you can get the erection started. Then the medications will help it be better.
Gotcha. Okay, and I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
I just want to clarify that point, because that's an interesting point. It's not a magic, like you're saying, a fountain of youth. It helps you if you're in the mood. But you're saying, and then you were saying about alcohol and...
Alcohol will compromise the effects of Viagra. So if you've had a glass or two of wine at dinner and then you've taken a Viagra, you may not function very well that night. And most of us who may have had a similar experience in our younger years, when we never had a problem until one evening, we had a little more to drink than normally we would, and you might struggle that night.
Yeah, you mean that since I didn't knock down an entire fifth of scotch? What are you talking about? Okay. All right. So, and now the others, why are there three? Is it like they function differently or?
They basically function the same. There are three different companies that make them. Levitra and Viagra work in a very similar fashion. They both stay in your system for about 4 to 5 hours. The side effects tend to be similar. So with all three of them, some patients can have a headache. They can be a little bit colorblind for a few hours. As the medicines wear off, that goes away. There can be other specific side effects, but those are a couple of the common ones.
Hmm.
So Levitra and Viagra are almost identical, made by different companies. Cialis stays in your system about 36 hours. So the advantage to that is if you take a Cialis, for example, on a Friday afternoon and circumstances really don't work out Friday night, but it's still in your system on Saturday and the circumstances are better, then Saturday may be a good thing. The drawback, and when patients come in, they will often bring in an ad or something and ask me about Cialis and say, well, I think I want this. I generally, just personally in my practice, I usually start with Levitra or Viagra, and then if a patient tolerates it well, we will try Cialis. And the reason for that is if they're prone to headaches, if they take Viagra, they'll have a headache for 4 hours and it goes away. If they take Cialis, they're going to have a headache for a day and a half. So,
so be happy at all.
It's like the mother of all headaches. So I usually use it in a stepwise fashion like that.
I got you. All right. We'll talk some more about this, but we got to take a quick break here. And other men's health. I mean, you know, things like being screened for colon cancer, stuff like that.
Yes.
We don't talk about this stuff.
Because
nobody's going to touch me there. I'll tell you, I'm a man. Nobody touches me. And I'm here with Dr. Don Stritsky, who is a board-certified urologist. And we're today taking time to talk about men's health. Now, why are we doing that? Well, because you can't turn on a financial program that the advertisements aren't targeted to us older guys and women, I will add, because they're certainly very much involved in this whole process. And women talk about it, men don't. So that's what we're trying to do, is maybe dispel some of those myths. So we've been talking about some of the big ones, of course, the low T, which is around the testosterone. We've already covered that a lot. Erectile dysfunction, so you've got that out there. Do you routinely suggest that for people? Go ahead and try it. Is it okay? It doesn't sound like we were saying in the previous segment that the side effects are all that big. I mean, a headache is a headache. That's not a big thing.
And what I advise patients, if they are prone to headache, because some will be, if they take Advil or Aleve, something like that, the same time they take Viagra, that will usually prevent the headache. So that's usually manageable. The one time that Viagra or Levitra or Cialis, because their side effects tend to be similar, the one time it is dangerous is if a man is taking nitroglycerin for his heart every day.
Mm.
So he has a heart condition, he's taking nitroglycerin. The medications like Viagra and Cialis interact with the nitroglycerin. The blood pressure can drop. A man can have a heart attack. So that's why on the advertisements and so forth, they talk about be careful if you have heart disease and all of those things. The real issue is the medication nitroglycerin interacting with these other medicines. That's really the one danger.
Gotcha.
There is risk that a man can have a prolonged erection. That's called priapism. and that's an erection that's 100% firm after 4 hours. It is rare, but it can happen, and if it does, it can cause serious permanent damage to the penis. So that a man may, it's possible that he may never have another erection no matter what.
Yeah.
So if it does happen, then a man needs to get help immediately, because that is a very serious thing. But again, that is not common.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah, I know it's the butt of all jokes when they list it on there. Yeah, no, I'm going to go show my neighbor.
That's one of my favorite experiences. I had a gentleman who was a delightful guy in the office, who is a rancher and kind of rough and tough and a great guy. And so we talked about his prostate and urination and all of that, and we're winding up the appointment. And he goes, "Doc, by the way, my erections aren't quite what they were," and so he's interested. So I go through this long discussion about the various treatments and so forth. And so I'm writing him a prescription, and he looks at me and he says, "Yeah," he goes, "you know, and I saw on TV that if I have an erection that lasts for longer than 4 hours, I'm supposed to call you." And I looked up at him and I said, "No, what you need to do is call your neighbor lady." And he got this twinkle in his eye and this big smile, and he goes, "Okay." But no, that's not what you want to do. You want to call your physician.
Quickly. That's right. All right, let's go back to general. Oh, wait a minute here. I got to, because these are all kinds of stuff comes on the Internet, too. All right? And Ray was talking about some of this other stuff, too. You know, Spanish fly. I'm not going to go all these right. But, eat a bunch of oysters.
Yes.
Or seafood or whatever it is, and all those things, do they help? Is it what are myths, and are there any herbal types of things that people do? And also, are there any of the three you listed? Is there anything really out there? Or are people not only wasting their money online with the quotes, Viagra replacement, but they are also taking extreme medical risk?
The herbs and vitamins and so forth, there's really no good scientific data that shows that is really helpful, more than a sugar pill, more than a placebo. I do believe that there may be a handful of things that may have some minor benefit, but we really don't have a handle on how much it does help and what the risks are. So we don't routinely advise patients to take all of those, so we have to be careful.
Okay.
Again, they're not regulated. There may be some minor benefits, but limited and unclear risks. So that's kind of the herbs and the vitamins and things. If somebody wants to take a multivitamin, that's certainly reasonable. But eating 10 oysters a day or something, psychologically, you may believe you're going to do better, and that's the placebo effect.
I believe my mercury would shoot levels in my body would shoot through the roof.
Exactly. But whether it will really help your libido or the firmness of your erections is questionable.
Gotcha. I want to shift to a problem that I didn't know about until you and I were talking about this recently. And because it's not talked about, because there's no medication for it, so how are we supposed to know about this until we have it individually? And that's an orgasm problem. Quite the opposite.
Right. And so that's called ejaculatory dysfunction.
Okay. I guess as young teenagers, we learned it quite the opposite way, didn't we?
Yes. So the reality is, as men get into their 50s and 60s, many men will start to struggle with their ejaculations. And it's because the nerves that are responsible for ejaculation are completely different than the nerves that are responsible for erections. And those nerves for ejaculation, just because of wear and tear and so forth, don't function as well. So men will start to have problems where they may not be able to have an ejaculation.
Hmm.
And that can be very concerning to them.
And certainly to the partner, I would think.
That's right. And that's a problem, because for many times for the partner, there's a sense of satisfaction knowing that the man did have an ejaculation. And so if that's not happening, then once again the partner starts to wonder, well, is there something about me? What's wrong here? And the reality is that, again, is kind of a normal aging experience, that it happens. The unfortunate thing is there is not a good treatment. So you don't see commercials and you don't see advertisements in magazines. And along with that, I mentioned this to men. I say, there's actually a lot of research being done on this, and it's a huge problem, because there are many women who struggle with not having orgasms in their 20s and 30s.
Right.
And if we could find something, some women do just fine, but some women struggle or never have orgasms. If we could find a medication that would be helpful, many women would be starting it at a younger age.
Right.
And it's kind of like you flipped a light switch for men, they go, oh, yeah, I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, I was having fun.
Yeah, we have our blinders on and we see it and that's it. But it is actually a common problem for men as they age, and unfortunately there's not really good effective treatment.
Okay. And you say common. I've not heard of it. So
yes.
Common, is it like when you say common, by some point in time this is going to be an issue for people?
As men get into their 50s, it's happening a little bit, but especially 60s and 70s, over 50% of men will be experiencing that. Just to round out that discussion, actually, it's interesting, but a man can have problems and not be able to have an erection, but they can have an orgasm because the nerves responsible for the orgasm are different than the erection. So if a man actually is stimulated but has a flaccid penis that's not erect, he can be stimulated to the point where he can have an orgasm.
Wow. Okay. That would take a lot of understanding from your partner, would it not? Which is why we're talking about this and how important. So that brings me to this point as we wrap up this last minute. Is it a better idea for couples to come in and visit with you together?
You know, that all depends on their relationship.
Yeah, and do they do that very often?
No.
Yeah.
It's usually just the man who comes in. But certainly if his wife wants to come in or his partner, they're always welcome because they can add to the conversation and they also have questions. So it really just depends on the relationship and the couple.
Right, right. Well, thanks. This is very – we got lots of more. But one other thing we got to cover, right, and that's just fast, okay? But colon cancer is something we don't think about very often.
Right.
And you start screening at that at what age?
50.
50.
And you need to do it. You need to go in and have a colonoscopy. There can be small growths in the colon called polyps that when they first form, they are not cancer, but then with time they turn into cancer. They can be removed quickly. If you have a colonoscopy that's good, then you don't need it for another 10 years.
Hmm.
So they put you to sleep to do it. It's a simple thing to do. I've done it. It's very important, and that would be a good discussion at some point because men avoid that as well.
Yeah, I did too. I'm getting mine next week, my first one. So
right.
A little late.
2 years late, that's not bad.
I guess. All right. Dr. Don Strzycki, thank you so much. We appreciate your time very much.
Thank you.
We'll have you back soon. You've been listening to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petso. Have a great rest of the weekend.